Hello, everyone. Adam D here, coming with another CTF Radio episode. This one is very exciting, and it's a continuation of a previous episode you have done, one of our actually most popular episodes. And like always, I have Zardes here with me. Zardes, why don't you say hi?
Hello, hackers.
And with our new way of starting the show,
come a long way from hiding in some quiet closet in the after party.
You're getting there, man. So, we should have. Speaking of recording things in random places in Vegas, I actually didn't tell you yet, Jan, but I just cut together the our DEF CON 33 live recorded in Vegas show. So I think that's going to go really well. And so I'm super stoked that, A, we didn't just go into immediate like hibernation mode like we normally do. We are starting off with a bang. So we have with us one of the unsung heroes of our DEF CON 31 live interviews. So if people remember, we started in a bathtub and then we interviewed various people in the community throughout. And one of those people we interviewed in a closet at the after party. And one of the notes that I got from my mom on that episode is, you need to have that poor lady back because we couldn't hear her and she sounds great. We are very excited for V to be joining us today. V, why don't you say hi to the people?
Hey, thanks for taking me out of the closet, guys. I really appreciate it.
That is not what we plan to do on this podcast. So whatever. You know, that's not our jam, but we are happy to have you here in a high quality CTF radio version.
Yeah, no, I'm very excited. Hi everyone, my name is V. I'm in CTFs. I'm part of originally Maple Bacon, a Canadian team, and that is of course one third of Maple Mallet Magistrates, who very recently won DEF CON 33 CTF.
For the right fourth now. Year in the row is what you didn't say, but I will go ahead and say it.
You know, hey, no big deal. We know how to count to four. But currently, I work at Google as a security engineer. I'm still very much involved with CTFs. So, yeah, excited to talk about it.
Awesome. Yeah, this is great. Okay, so, maybe I think because my memory is very bad, even though these things are captured on YouTube. So maybe can you tell the people how you got started in CTF. I think that'll kind of help. Maybe you can take us through your CTF journey.
Yeah. Zardes, this is a conversation that we had because it involves Super Smash Brothers. Basically, I'm a very competitive person. And for the longest time in university, I channeled that competitive energy into playing Smash. So I got super into it. But as you can imagine, playing Super Smash in university is not the most conducive to earning high grades.
I'm sorry, there's not a Super Smash class or anything like that?
No, not at UBC, but so I figured that maybe I should find some better outlet for this competitive energy.
And you thought about like friendlies, but you play for grades.
Oh, yeah, no, I was think I've brought it up to my professors for sure.
Yeah.
They always put me on.
Fox
I was gonna
only,
say, who are you playing against?
No,
and who's going to take the other side of that bet? But it has to be the professor.
Yeah, it's like my
take
professor.
Take a bet like that. My competitive days are long behind me, though. I'm not saying I take a bet like that against you, but against like an average student.
Yeah, they are, man. I can beat you in Smash. That's how I've watched
well,
you. Are.
Well. Let's say you have sometime.
Oh,
I've been practicing against my kids.
Okay, so like we could, I can give you my Steam ID later, or sorry, not my Steam, my Switch ID later.
Let's do it. My kids don't know how to play yet, though. They just kind of hold the controller.
I was gonna say, A, they're like 5 and 3. B, if he loses, he's just gonna say, yeah, that was one of the kids playing.
That is a good built-in excuse. No, it's been Anyways, all right, we might as well go on this tangent. So
yep, go ahead.
The Switch 2 has the GameCube controllers, right? That the wireless ones. And until now, I'm gonna maybe we'll put photos in the show notes. I have this mobile Smash setup. I don't know if you were playing back then. Our second year hosting, we had a Smash party on the CTS space right afterwards. And basically I had my Switch.
In 2019?
Yeah, in 2019. Do you remember right afterwards?
I don't remember at all.
It was awesome. I had the Switch, and then I had 8 Wave Birds with the 2 adapters, and we just everyone set up and played. It was awesome. And
why didn't you bring it this year? That's crazy.
Yeah, it's not my CTF space, you know, to do the Smash party in. That was super bulky because you needed the GameCube adapters and the Wavebirds have the base station. Now they have just a Bluetooth GameCube controller that Nintendo makes. It's perfect in every way. Yeah. And, you know, very competitive people say, yeah, but it has like 3 frames of lag. But, I'm 15 years beyond caring about 3 frames of lag, I think. But awesome thing is now it's like super much easier to carry. So if you go to coffee shops enough just to get some peace and quiet, I set up the kids with, there's a Switch and they each have a GameCube controller. It's great. Right. When they manage to hit each other, like, and then I'm like, well, we can't scream in coffee shops.
Right.
That whole story sounds much cooler
in
my head.
Screaming in public, let's keep going.
We can only cry in coffee spots. So that was, you said what, 2019? I was not playing then. I was still sort of into Smash, but that was, I think, the turn of when I started getting into CTF.
Cool.
So 2020 was when...
CTFs were your pandemic hobby? Is that what you're saying?
Exactly, they were. They were precisely my pandemic hobby. I think I did a bunch of research into like CTFs and like fell down the rabbit hole of DEF CON CTF and was like, that's really cool. I'd love to go to Vegas. Let's try it out. And before like the lockdown, I was attending like in-person classes, and then I met Robert Shao, which was sort of like a starstruck moment in of itself, because I think like 30 minutes prior I was like just reading about PPP, then I like go into my class and I'm like, wow, that was a really cool article, is that Robert Shao? So
nice.
So that was really cool, and then 2020, the rest is history.
So then, but how did you get like into Maple Bacon? Like, was it a big thing at that point? Was it just kind of starting?
Yeah. So Maple Bacon started in 2019. So it was active for a year before I joined. And it was mostly like Robert Shao and some other UBC students who were close to graduating. So by the time that I joined, it was mostly new people. And you know, Robert Shao, PPP, he suggested Pico CTF, which was a very, very approachable, accessible barrier to figuring out how to play in CTFs. But I think if you ever like have the just absolute joy of hyperfixating on something, you will probably solve all of Pico CTF problems within like a couple of nights, which is what happened with me. And just like came clamoring back to the next meeting for more. And I think the next one was quite literally like Sekon or something like that. So like way above the original pay grade that I was used to. So
we talked about Sekon on the show before in the context of their the year they had an entire QR code category.
Yes. Yeah.
That's a great CTF.
It was so fun, yeah. I remember Robert Shao talking about it. So again, because I was not at that level of solving those kinds of challenges just yet. So just hearing about him and a few other people who solved challenges talk about the things that they did to get the flag were really cool. So I stuck around, even though I got like hit pretty hard by very hard CTF and you didn't solve anything.
So this is great. Yeah, so you've showed up. So I think maybe... if you could talk about that a little bit more of what you kind of remember and what you did, because I see this a lot where people are kind of always asking, well, how do I get into CTFs? And one of my things is just like, play them.
Do it.
Yeah. You may not do anything, but that doesn't mean you're not doing anything.
Yeah. I think a lot of people, they tend to have a very linear understanding of like skill progression, which is that like, oh, like the next step after Pico CTF is Pico CTF 2. Like there is like a sort of logical grouping of steps that you can do that follow cleanly after the other in order to get better at a skill. And for a lot of cases, like that's kind of true. Like I know learning an instrument, certain instruments, not all, don't cancel me, but certain instruments is apparently like this. I personally think that like learning art and drawing is like this, but I don't think learning CTFs is quite like this. There are a lot of times where you will come across barriers that you just won't be able to go through at the time until you just kind of keep doing the thing where you're hitting against it and finally you figure it out, which I would make the argument is kind of more rewarding. I feel like it forces you to learn under new circumstances, which makes you apply the lesson in unique ways. But yeah, like my advice is quite similar. You know, you just kind of do it, but try not to get discouraged when you come across a very hard problem, which is inevitable. Like that will happen. And try to like get something out of it. Even if you don't solve the challenge, even if you don't get the flag, just figure out what you can get from it and learn from it. Yeah.
That's great. Yeah, I think, and there's something to me about like, part of getting good at CTFs is getting good at the unknown and getting like being okay about like diving into something and like, well, let me go learn about this thing in like a couple hours. And a lot of people, if you just like, I mean, I saw this like just came up on the, I think it was like the DEF CON CTF channel or something. And somebody's like, oh, do I grind Pwn College and then Pwnable.kr and then this other thing and then this other thing? And it's like, I mean, you'll learn stuff, but like, I don't know that that'll like, that's not necessarily the way to get really good at CTFs. I think you can do that and like actually play CTFs to see what you're doing and kind of get thrown into the mix.
You have to force yourself into new situations in a CTF because like any new CTF that comes out is just by consequence a new situation.
And it's kind of almost a tautology in terms of what a CTF should be, in that what I created Pwn College initially to as a ramp so that people could step cleanly into playing CTFs.
Yeah.
But the more I think about it, the more I think if there's a CTF that you ground through Pwn College and now you step cleanly into it's probably not a great CTF because it doesn't have that, you know, extra thing that you're going to learn.
Except that you at least have in the community dojo all the a lot of prior CTFs that are starting to get accumulated there, and I think that's where it becomes interesting, right?
Yes, I agree. CTFs are like an immediate feedback loop. Like either you get the flag or you don't get the flag. Like if you get the flag, you have learned a very valuable lesson. But if you don't get the flag, you have also learned a very valuable lesson.
Yes.
So I don't know. I also kind of see that, especially in UBC, like you see a lot of people like they get discouraged and maybe after giving up, they don't really look at the problem even after the CTF ends and write-ups are available. I feel like that's like a missed opportunity.
Do you learn a lot through write-ups or like did you getting started?
I have been given the incredible wisdom by Robert Shao, which is don't look at write-up, try and solve it first. Which I think there's some people out there who can, like, they can read a write-up and they're like, got it, cool, acknowledge. That's not me. So I have to physically solve the challenge myself. So
I am absolutely right there with you. I can't quite say I've never read a write-up in my life, but I don't think I've ever had a situation where a write-up was like, and this is helpful to me in the long term, right?
Yeah. Probably one of my, like, favorite examples that I tell people is that in Google CTF 20, either 2020 or 2021, like relatively early in my career, there was a challenge and it was like several parts long and I was like nowhere close to figuring it out. I think maybe I saw like I figured out one part, but the core premise was that like I came out of that challenge knowing less because it was just such a complex challenge. But there were some key components that were really interesting to me, like just on a purely curiosity standpoint. So I started researching into it more. And even though the challenge, like the author write-up and everything was like, I saw it and okay, cool. Yeah, like that's how the solution works. But I kept researching more into it that I started getting really into like this class of vulnerabilities that came from this challenge that that ended up being very useful for me because that class of vulnerabilities was in a CTF called Dragon CTF 2020, which ended up being very useful for me because I was like, hold on a second. I've seen this before. And then that ended up allowing me to solve. Oh, yeah. So this was 2020 because this was Dragon CTF 2020 and allowed me to solve a hard challenge. And that was like an incredible moment for me.
Cool.
Like, sorry, guys.
Yeah, I will do the contrarian take. I actually think depending on where you are in the challenge, I think a README can sometimes I feel like there's a lot of these tricks that are floating around that when the thing that you're missing falls into some trick and it's not something fundamental in your understanding of what's going on. It's like, I didn't think to do this. That kind of unlocks like new ways of thinking about it. I think if you just read it, that's definitely not the way to go. I think it's like you have to go back and actually do it because like it's the making the bits and bytes line up and debugging it when it goes wrong, I think are the key things.
The problem is the write-up is so there's such walkthroughs that there's not a lot of space left for exploring the technique. You're just applying it. Whereas if you...
But if you don't even know the technique, like you don't even... I don't know. Like I'm trying to think of an example because it's definitely happened to me where I've read a thing and I was like,
I don't know, the malloc or free hooks of you know, the mid-2010s, right? Like if you don't know that this functionality exists at all,
I was also thinking like one gadget also is another thing that like, sure, you can create the ROP chain yourself, but like if you now know that this tool exists and it can pop out the exact address to get to what you need, that was like an aha moment that I didn't get there on my own, but there were tooling for it.
Yeah. There's... Why use ROP chain when fewer gadget do trick? I get it.
Yeah. But just learning about it, I think the way that I learned this rings true. I can't remember the specifics, but something like I didn't know about the magic gadget and I failed to solve a CTF challenge because I was trying to build a more complex ROP chain. And then I found out about the magic gadget, not through a write-up, but like through chatter. And then from then on, I was able to solve that.
But isn't that the same thing?
Challenge.
Like if you had just read that write-up that said that, and then
Slightly
I did
different.
This, use this thing, you would have been like, oh crap, I should go look at this thing. Just
it feels like it wouldn't have gotten as entrenched in my brain. That's how it feels to me.
Interesting.
Maybe.
Not sure I agree, but you know, I think different people have different learning styles, I think is actually the key there. And it probably it depends on where you are in I don't know, in things, but cool.
There's,
okay.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
I was just going to say like there's a level of like it feels like the challenge is spoiled if you read the write-up before you feel like you deserve reading the write-up, quote unquote. So like that has definitely stopped me from reading write-ups for challenges that I struggle on, where I'm like, damn, I'm sure that there is something going on here that I could probably consult the write-up for. I will not read it though. So I got that. I this isn't to say that I don't read write-ups. I do. I read them extensively, but yeah, I think I've derived most of my learning and skill from reading it, or sorry, from playing it and then maybe reading it after.
I also like the why didn't I think of that approach, because like way of thinking about it of like, you know, if it's a technique you just don't know, okay, fine, that's one thing, but like if it is something you maybe should have known, there's definitely times with that, like you read the write-up and you're like, oh my, way back in the day, like Orange's CTF challenges like were web challenges, but it required you to like, it'd be like six lines of PHP code is the challenge itself. And it relied, like, I think I banged my head against one of those and then read, maybe not even the write-up, but the author's like version of it. And it was like, yeah, you read the PHP source code and you found this thing that did this thing. And so then I was like, oh yeah, that's what you can do. And so I've done that now in several, like, you know, of those style of CTFs of like, sometimes you have to dig deeper. And that was kind of the lesson that I took from there. Not whatever that specific technique was. I don't even remember what it was. But that the like, oh yeah, sometimes you got to dive in really.
Yeah. Get like a silver bullet to figure it out. I get
exactly.
It.
So, cool. Okay, so then you started doing CTFs. What was roughly like the size of the Maple Bacon team at this point?
12, including me and
nice.
Robert Shaw.
Okay.
Yeah, no, we were small. There was like a lot of people in like University of British Columbia that were interested in CTFs, but I split them up into two people, like people who were interested in CTFs and knew what a CTF was, and people who were interested in CTFs and were like, I watched like Mr. Robot. So we had a lot of like this was a gap that was sort of more apparent the more CTFs we played in. And there was a concerted attempt to try and bridge that gap to make people more, you know, like more confident in their skills and to sort of get everyone on like a some level, baseline level of CTF enjoyment, if you will. At the time, there was no like structured leadership formula for Maple Bacon. At the time, it didn't need it. It was like 12 people. I think the more and more we played in CTFs and better we did in CTFs, I think Dragon CTF 2020. So Ginvial, shout out to you. I love Dragon CTF 2020. I have talked about it extensively, but like that was one where we did really, really well. Like one of like our first incredible placements. And after that, we started gaining like a lot of visibility and more people, more students started joining. So it's like, maybe we should figure out how to address this gap in skills. So I started thinking of ways to like, bridge that gap, besides like telling people to play in Pico CTF. And at the time, Pwn College was like just recently made around that time. So like seeing them there.
You can say it was bad. It's okay. He can take
no,
it.
What? Anyway, I'm kidding. Like just sort of like figuring out a way to take them from these educational materials into actually like confidently playing in CTFs regularly. And that ended up being like this whole like journey that I went through trying to figure out how to do that. But like before I knew it, like 2021 ended, 2022 started. And Robert Shao was talking about DEF CON quals and he goes, yeah, so V, you're the leader of Maple Bacon. And I go, what? like have we thought about merging for DEF CON? I think it was 30 in 2022. And I go, hold on, sorry, you've just said like 13 things to me in one sentence. Like, allow me to process this. So yeah, it's a casual segue into several selections of topics that you wish to discuss more. But yeah, that was kind of how Maple Bacon started to evolve. After we started doing really well in CTFs, more people started joining and I wanted to.
Yeah, wait, so this is great. So you were the de facto leader of the team, but not actually the leader of the team, at least in your own mind?
Yeah, like, I don't know. There's a lot of, like, student-run clubs that do have, like, this structure mm-hmm. and they kind of need it. But Maple Bacon was sort of like this informal group of friends hacking together.
I see.
So it didn't really feel like there needed to be a leader figure up until we graduated from 12 people to, like, 30 to 40, 50. And then, like, rather quickly, our Discord server exponentially grew from, like, this small group of 12-ish people to, like, I think today it's, like, at 600 or 700. A lot of these are, like, UBC students who are interested in security. So, like, yeah, that started to necessitate the need for some structure. Robert Shaw, I think he just was, like, yeah, like, I don't know, like, the closest, like, leader figure here at the time that we were talking was, like, yeah, it's V. And I go, really cool, thank you so much. I need to think about this for a little bit. But then shortly after, we started discussing merging for, like, Maple Bacon merging with PPP and the Duck to create MMM.
Super team.
Yeah.
Wow. Okay. Awesome. And can you touch on a little bit, like give people a little insight into what kind of educational material, like did you get like a roadmap set up of what people could do? Like,
really
what
that whole process.
Yeah. I'm fascinated.
We had, there were like a list of resources that we, and by we, I mean like me, Robert Shaw, and a few other like key members of Maple Bacon. We like coalesced together. So yeah, Pwn College was one of them. Pico CTF. There was like Pwnable KR, the things that I think were mentioned before, and really just like anything that we could get our hands on. Like I think OWASP Juice Shop was also one of those things to help with like web hacking. And basically, like, we provided these resources and said, like, okay, like, if you want, like, a no-stakes way to figure out how CTFs kind of work, you know, like, they're, like, it wasn't, like, time-boxed. I think, well, maybe Pwn College was, but, like, none of these were time-boxed. You could solve them on your own time. There was, like, many write-ups available for these challenges. So, like, yeah, like, play in the sand and see how you like it. And then people who are like, I would like more. I am ready to explore the world. Mm-hmm. We would actively look for CTFs that would like market themselves as beginner friendly or that we knew were beginner friendly. At the time, this was like, I don't know, sometimes easy, sometimes hard to do. We had a lot of like CTFs like Angstrom CTF, UT CTF. I was like, has like some level of beginner friendly challenges. Seesaw, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
And so these were happening at a some like pretty like consistently regular schedule that we could sort of move these beginners into these big groups to play in these beginner friendly CTFs. But at times we wouldn't have that. Like maybe the next CTF on the horizon was like ASUS. We're not going to do that. So we often instead like the more senior members would try to demo challenges from like other CTFs and just explain their thought process. And that ended up being very helpful for beginners because it gave beginners the opportunity to just ask these people directly, wait, how did you come to this conclusion or something like that? One of like the founding, what I consider like a founding member of Maple Bacon, who's not really active because he's, you know, busy with something called a job. I love my job. Philip is his name. He super into like binary exploits, reverse engineering, and he was talking about this one challenge which involves like a pretty involved ROP chain. And even though like at surface level this ROP chain was quite difficult, like there was a lot of like levels of like interaction. I don't think it could have been solved with a one gadget. There were a lot of beginners who, because of how complex it was, they just had like a wealth of questions. And that ended up being really helpful because like Philip just, you know, spent forever just talking about his thought process. And that ended up being an incredible exchange of information. So what happened was like we had these beginners who like just prior, like 5 minutes ago, they were like, what's a ROP chain? And then like 10 minutes later, they were like, okay, so like if I chain together this pop and I get this like brand, you know, like they were already starting to understand the fundamentals of like what a ROP chain was and things like that. So that ended up being really, really helpful. So just having like senior members be willing to talk about and just demo these challenges live in front of the beginners was super good.
Did you find any sort of like a burnout effect with this? This whole topic is something that Shellfish has struggled with. The generational building of new talent is not quite accidental, but there's much more chance involved than I would, you know, be comfortable with normally. One thing we observed is when we do this sort of stuff where, all right, we have these regular meetings and someone walks through some concept, they burn out walking through and answering those. I mean, maybe there needs to be a bigger free filter, but they're like, what's a ROP chain questions over and over. Probably a CTF player can only really teach buffer overflows, you know, some finite amount of time until they're like, fuck this.
Yeah, yeah. No, I get what you mean. I won't speak for the other like members of Maple Bacon because maybe like I could be being, I could be like, no, it was great. And then meanwhile, like Philip is like, I fucking hated it. Sorry if I'm not allowed to swear.
You are definitely allowed. Have you met Jan?
Just making sure. We tried two ways to remedy this because I definitely felt like a level of burnout, and I'm sure like other people felt some degree of just getting annoyed by it at least. Mm-hmm. And one was we ended up making our own challenges for the younger people to play in. And these were like very straightforward, like Pico CTF level challenges. And this ended up becoming like this very interesting bargain of like, wait, this is actually really fun. Should we organize a CTF? Which again, another topic for later. But we ended up like making our own challenges where we like created these like incredibly detailed walkthroughs with like little side notes of like, okay, so a ROP chain is this, this, and that. Oh, like this is what a gadget is in this context. And so this, we basically created this like very interactive FAQ with these challenges that we made. And a lot of people liked it. We created like a little mini competition within Maple Bacon for for people who like solved all these challenges. Mm-hmm. And yeah, it kind of like created a taste for challenge development, which I'm sure I can talk about later. But yeah, so that was one way. And then the other one was spending or like trying to alter the perception of like, I guess, like the dynamic between person who's chronically asking for stuff and person who's chronically mm-hmm. answering stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. I'm coming from like a background of an artist. I feel like I've maybe, if anyone in the CTF scene knows me, then they know that I was not supposed to be a hacker. I was supposed to be an artist. So
is there a difference?
Well, one that uses a paintbrush. And then, but the way that I've learned about how to deal with like burnout in the artistic world is like to, and I think this is like not unique to the artistic world, but like if you really lean on your community, it kind of helps and you get that level of support in a way that you don't feel like your peers are just like your artistic rivals. Like they're also your friends. Mm-hmm. So I was like, well, hey, like Maple Bacon, you know, we all have like at least one thing in common, CTFs. So like maybe we have other things in common. So we started like actively like hanging out together and like trying to like do social events as well. And that ended up creating a really good dynamic where people just started making a lot of friends. And I think when you're talking to your friends, there's like less of a feeling of burnout because it doesn't feel like teacher and student. It kind of feels like this is just my friend asking me about like random stuff. So, yeah.
That's interesting. I wonder if... So, was it...
Because I think, at least, Jan, from my understanding, I think this idea of like, hey, just don't prepare anything. Present your last cool CTF
solve. Yeah, maybe that's...
That requires A, less prep, and B, is super cool because it's already something... It's like a lecture walkthrough or write-up, basically, right?
Exactly. In Maple Bacon, we believe in the ethos of doing it live. So we never prepared. That's a lie. I prepared like one or two slides, but like we never really like had prepared material every meeting. We would like have a problem that we solved and we were like, yeah, I'll talk about this. This created like really fun situations where let's say like the demo went flawlessly. So like all the new students are like, yo, oh my God, that was crazy. And then let's say that the demo didn't go flawlessly. And then you had this incredible moment where people are helping you out. And it's like, oh, maybe you should try this. And that ends mm-hmm. up like teaching them more stuff too. You know, if you're okay with like dealing with the embarrassment of your demo not going well, which I handle in a very healthy way and manner. But
by throwing things and screaming?
Yeah.
Yeah, I get it. The other thing I wanted to say to point out to people is, I don't know if, and maybe you can clear, you know, I'm going to go out on a limb and guess that actually doing this teaching helped you become better as well.
Hell yeah. I think I had so many times where like a student.
It's cool.
Someone at Maple Bacon.
Yeah.
God.
They probably were a student, right? So this makes sense. Maybe just not your student or
not,
you know.
My student. Someone asked me a question. Like, I don't know. Maybe they wanted clarification on some like class of vulnerabilities. So for context, I normally main web, but I've been doing other things. But back then I was doing web. So they would, I don't know, ask me a question like, so wait, why does like the same origin policy block like cross-site scripting or whatever?
Let's find out.
Yeah. And I'm like, yeah, let's find out. And then what we ended up like finding out was actually like there was a very specific behavior that was different in Chrome and Firefox. And I was like, whoa, wait, I need to write this down, you know? So there was a lot of moments like that that ended up being very valuable for me as well.
Those kind of gotchas are super cool about, or like the 08 moments are super cool about CTF. Yeah. Yesterday, last night, I was, someone asked a question on the Pwn College Discord about one of the challenges. And it led to me spending 2 hours in the middle of the night looking at reading the source code of the move utility. Like, how does this work? And is there a time rates condition here?
Yeah. I had a similar moment like that. There, someone was, I don't remember the exact context, but someone was asking about like a node library and like why this like certain thing kind of like overrode this property that this node library like screwed up with. And I didn't have the immediate answer, but I had like a theory as to why I was like going that way. But I did end up looking at it, and then I spent like, I don't know, the entire night looking at this very specific node library. I think it was like 3 a.m. and I was like, what the hell am I doing? because like that's all I was looking at. And then I ended up like creating a CTF challenge out of it. Yep. So good things, you know.
Yeah, exactly. And it's those little things. And that's something I've noticed too, is that, you know, my background was also web, and then I started teaching like, you know, binary exploitation and stuff, and having to demo it in front of people, walk through it, answer questions from either master students or undergrad students. Like, it really makes you, and doing live demos actually as well, like it forces you to quickly develop a much deeper understanding.
Yeah, exactly. And that was, I think, I don't know, I found that personally, I found that very fun in Maple Bacon. We especially loved it when Robert Shaw did it, because, you know, he'll probably like demo like an Order of the Overflow era DEF CON challenge.
Get the dust off and then,
you know, just
exactly.
But it was so fun to see it, and we in Maple Bacon always encouraged like question asking, like, you know, there's no such thing as a stupid question, no matter how quote unquote trivial it may seem. So we wanted to make sure that like whoever was asking questions could like feel okay doing that, even if the question was like really simple or really really like complex to answer. I think that helped a lot.
Awesome. Wow, cool. Yeah, this is fascinating, because I think many CTF teams probably don't talk about it publicly, but in order to survive for a while, you need to develop, like Jan said, some way of mentoring new people. You can't just have the same old people doing it year after year after year. It just like,
yeah,
you get attrition over time. So yeah, sharing, like, this is part of why we love doing this, is getting to talk about that stuff with other teams, and hopefully finding we have stuff in common so we don't see each other as enemies.
I will never see Shellfish as an enemy. You guys are treasured friends of us. I speak for all of MMM, and when I say that you...
More of a comedic sideshow, like sidekick, you know?
We love seeing Shellfish wherever we are. It's like, oh my God, is that Shellfish? Hell yeah. Like, I think there were a few people in the after party who was wearing the Shellfish like logo.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And I think, like, I don't know, the friends that I was with, like in MMM, we were like, yo, is that Shellfish? Anyway, yeah.
Cool. Well, yeah, we appreciate it. Great. Okay, so yeah, then maybe I'm trying to see about hitting the highlights. So then walk us through like your experience with MMM. So you were, you know, part of this big conglomerate, I mean, not, but a conglomerate team, right? Which has its own challenges of like integrating and talking with each other, right? It's no longer your group of the friends that you have made, right? You're like with these other people.
Yeah. I think I don't know if I've mentioned this earlier, but Robert Shaw started Maple Bacon, and Robert Shaw, PPP, Brian Pack, co-founder and CEO of Theory, also PPP. So like realistically, MMM is just sort of like the totality of Plaid Parliament of Voting, if
yes.
you think about it.
Yes. I still think of it that way. No, you know, not to offend yeah. anyone, but it
no,
is a it is like the evolution of PPP, right?
Yeah. So yeah. I mean, we stuck with the naming convention, so. But yeah, so when we agreed to do a merge, the idea was that we wanted to see. Well, it was like two questions that we wanted to answer. Like, one is, how well do we perform when we are with not only like our like the team that we're comfortable with, but like the teams that other members of like PPP have kind of cultivated and created through their own endeavors. and besides the fact that like, could we mesh well and like, did we want to play together and all this stuff? How did this like dynamic of three teams merging as one, how does that like bolster our weaknesses? I mean, you know, the worst case scenario is if like, we stepped on each other's toes and then like shit went, you know, haywire.
Which is I mean, people, if you've played, you know, CTFs with a larger group than you're used to, like that can definitely like happen.
100%. So that was something that we were also like semi worried about. So we were trying to like focus more on like, how do we best address any deficits, if any, you know, that each team has. 2022, when we first merged, we spent like a good chunk of like after making the agreement and sort of talking about the logistics, we spent a good chunk of like just like figuring out who each person was and like how we were together.
Mm-hmm.
PPP is like an amazing team, so we had no issues like meshing with them. BPAC, incredible. Like, he's probably like whom I consider like the one of the main leader figures of MMM. And the Duck, like, I don't think I can, like, say any additional praises of, like, how talented they are. Like, they're crazy. So we had a, like, in the preliminary of just shortly after agreeing to merge and before we, I guess we announced that MMM was a merge, we had a lot of time just, like, figuring out, like, how to, you know, like, work with each other. A lot of this was, like, playing in other CTFs as MMM. And this was, again, before we announced the merge. So I think we played in, like, Google CTF in 2022 as MMM. I think that was, like, maybe the first or one of the first times that we played as MMM but didn't say anything. And that was pretty illuminating because that actually did showcase that there was a pretty good level of compatibility amongst all three teams. There were opportunities where, you know, person from XYZ team could be working on something, and then person from, like, different team, like, insert, like, one of Maple Bacon, PPP, or the Duck could come by and be like, oh, like, let's work on this together. So we kind of got over the hurdle of, like, how to best synergize with each other, like, pretty quickly. I think a lot of that was luck. I'm going to be so honest with you, because the best advice that I have, like, coming out of that was, oh, yeah, like, just talk to each other.
For a bunch of computer nerds can be very difficult. Like, that's actually not a straightforward thing.
Right.
So
it's non-trivial advice.
Yeah, but it is advice. I think that's, like, you recognize that is a, like, the communication of the team is a core part of the team.
100%. So when we figured that out, early on, like, I think everything else sort of just fell into place. We sort of got integrated with, like, the general tooling structure. We figured out, like, roles and, like, how to best approach certain things for DEF CON, like, pretty seamlessly. Like, there really didn't seem like there was an area in MMM during, like, the planning phase that was an obstacle for any of us. So, yeah, we announced it. I'm sure at the time many people were wondering who they were, but I think people had a suspicion that it was at least PvP. But yeah, then, you know, the rest is history.
Yeah. Very cool. Yeah, I mean, we were all, you know, to be perfectly honest, it was a little bit of sad from us on our side to not have PvP there just because they, you know, are similarly long. But then, of course, mm-hmm. I think from talking with everyone, it is very clear that it's not like it's an evolution of the thing. And so it's not a sad thing anymore.
But I mean, kind of pushing maybe back on that, I think CTF in general has been trending toward, you know, mergers and mergers and mergers. And it's been happening for a long time.
Yeah.
And it's, I mean, this is a topic probably for a whole other episode, but, you know, we've interviewed AOE after they won in 2021, and, you know, it's a merger of, like, six different organizations, right? And then we've interviewed, you know, Pig But Sad or whatever they were called at the time, and it's a merger of a, and so, you know, it's very difficult nowadays to start a club, even, you know, let's say Maple Bacon was in it alone. And, you know, ideally there should be a scene where that's possible. You can just do well and be competitive with a small crew like the old days. Yeah, but it feels like it's unclear how to bring those days back.
Yeah, I would agree with you. And I will say, like, I'm not saying this to complain about mergers. I don't think I have a leg in this race. I can't say shit. But, like, I do think that a lot of CTFs nowadays, they construct, like, hard problems for sure, but problems that I think are best attended with, like, multiple people looking at it. So, like, that just naturally promotes, you know, merging of teams.
Yeah, we were brainstorming. I mean,
like, culturally, there's this notion that, like, if you are putting on a CTF and a team solves all your challenges, then it was a bad, like, you did a bad job as organizers.
Yeah.
Right or wrong, I think every organizer feels that, right? Of, like, oh,
yes.
God, what if they're all done on Saturday? Yeah.
Yeah. One that's solved at the end, the last one, or not, like, one that's not solved, you know. But,
yeah.
I think, and at the same time, if, you know, there are teams that are just like, we have nothing to do. So in some sense, yeah, there's this natural push toward that. We were brainstorming because, of course, in the background of what's happening in this CTF scene as a whole is Nautilus Institute retired after 4 years of hosting DEF CON Finals. So it's another changeover. You know, I was chatting when Legit BS first took over the rules, that Legit BS was Order of the Overflow's predecessor. And so they hosted from like 2014 to 2018, something like that. Or 2013, 14, 15, 16, and 17. Their first couple of years, they had a size limit to the teams.
Yeah,
and so you can't bring more than, I don't remember, 8 people or something. And I don't know, it's kind of unenforceable in the world of VPNs and, you know, whatever. And so they kind of gave up.
It was unenforceable. We did not follow it, like, deliberately. And there are several teams that did. I can't say that. Yeah. I'm perfectly fine with stating that.
I don't think anyone truly followed it. I don't know. I have no idea. But especially at a time when kind of there wasn't quite the healthy CTF scene. And so, you know, you needed to bring some noobs to DEF CON just to look. And so it's like, you know, what counts as a player? Are the people like the peanut gallery looking at the pros solving things? Are those players? And so, you know, kind of that ship sailed. And so you can't really restrict them on that. But, you know, now we have this live CTF thing. So, for example, a DEF CON CTF final where every challenge is a live CTF challenge, or even quals. And you just have every 2 hours a new one or whatever. And you know, you just got to hack fast. But you don't need a big team to hack fast. You just need enough people to, you know, cover those bases. So maybe that's something where, you know, we can. But it's, I don't know. I think what was to me alarming about the PPP to MMM expansion is, you know, this is one of the best teams in the world, and they need to be part of a merger to be competitive.
Yeah.
And that's terrifying in a world where, you know.
I think that's one way to look at it. But if you look at even Shellfish's history, right? I mean, actually, hearing the Maple Bacon story is similar-ish to what I did at ASU when I started. I started my own CTF club, and then we started playing CTFs as Pwn Devils.
And people came in like, that's Adam Dupe.
They did not. Nobody ever said that. But No. They did not. But that's fine. But then, you know, we started doing well, and then we would play some CTFs with Shellfish, and it was like a, you know, a bit of a culture clash at first. But then they realized, like, oh, actually, you all just like hacking stuff, so you need to like get over it and like hack together and like one CTF together, and they were great. And then, you know, at a certain point, it was just like, well, yeah, we should just be Shellfish. And like, that was kind of the
yeah,
the
I
goal.
Guess the big difference is just the name state. But Shellfish
but
is
what,
less analogous.
It's like
less
that
amenable
old thing of,
to those. Well, you
won't understand this, Jan, but like, I think it's a Seinfeld joke about like, you know, at a certain point, you root for a sports team long enough. Who are you really rooting for? Like, there's new owners, new players, new coaches. It's just the uniform. You're a fan of the uniform, right? Like,
yeah, no, I've had this exact like discussion about hockey, not to be Canadian, but
I mean,
anyway.
You chose the most Canadian sport, but that's okay. But yeah, but that's it's a kind of a thing. It's right, like what's in a name, right? Like I don't, you know, it's hard to say whether people think they need to merge because they feel like they have to, or because they. It's more like it's the return of the prodigal, you know, seeds that have gone out and created teams. And
I guess there's two different. And even when we talked with AOE, right? I mean, there were a lot of, career connections where, hey, these are the students that make up the lab that is the feeder. You know, just traditionally, this company hires everyone from this university. And so, of course, we're going to keep playing together.
Yeah, so it just depends, right? And I think that's what talking to each of the teams is nice because you can get to know more of the story, right? It's not just like a scoreboard, you know, new name on the scoreboard. And you're like, who is this team? This happens to me all the time. Like, I'm so bad with, you know, these names of people.
Me too. Don't. Me too. I think, like, I don't know. For Google CTF this year, we had a few like newer teams, which was really exciting for us. Mm-hmm. But also gave us the very embarrassing moment of like, oh wow, like congratulations to.
Yeah. Yeah.
Shit. that was a little long
ago. Every year when we ran quals and then had to send out invitations, we had to do this like deconflicting between all of the people that pre-qualified last yes. year's winners and like, are they the same as these people, as those people? It's yeah. just yeah.
Yeah, no,
yeah, it's definitely an evolving scene.
Yeah. Speaking of, so clearly you are, well, not clearly, but you are no longer in school anymore. So you've done, you're now an in-person in the workforce. So maybe can you talk about like how CTF maybe led you to your job? Actually, I have no idea if it did or did not. I'm just guessing here, but.
It did. Yeah. 100%. I have no qualms in explicitly stating that CTFs were probably one of the biggest reasons I got this job. When I was graduating in 2022, I had an idea of what I wanted to do, especially like after doing CTF. So I was like, I could do this for a living. So I applied to like a bunch of places locally in Canada, but I thought that I was being a little like I was limiting my worldview, so to speak. So I was like, what? Just like apply to Google or like apply to like some of these tech companies, like see what happens. The worst they could say is no. So I cold applied
to Google.
Or nothing.
Dude, I just ghost you, but yeah. But right, also fine. Exactly. They could say yes at some point.
They could have said yes. I cold applied to Google, which I've been told is like not like does not give you high chances of I don't know. But I was like, well, again, like the worst that they could do is ghost me, so it's fine. But I did hear back, and then I originally was thinking about like doing like going to the Bay Area, but then I changed my mind and pivoted to a different place. And that place was hiring, I think, mid-level. So they upgraded the interview process to mid-level. And after going through the interview process and accepting the offer, I think I had a chat with like my now boss, and I was like, yeah, so like, this was really fun. Thank you so much. A lot of this experience was from like my CTF experience. And they were like, mm-hmm. Yeah, we know. We know. Don't worry about it. So yeah, CTFs were pretty like consistent through line for my career. And like now, even to this day, I'm the Google CTF lead. So I'm still doing CTFs just
great.
In a more organizational
So then
capacity.
Talk to us about the like Google. Yeah. We had on Sir Dark Hat, right? Like a long, long time ago.
Yeah.
To talk about Google.
3 or 4 years.
Yeah.
Love that guy. Big fan of that guy. He is incredible because sometimes he'll be like, hey, by the way, this. And I'm like, cool. Is there anything written down for this thing that you would like me to do? And he goes, no. And I go, great. So Google CTF is like orders of magnitude higher than any other CTF that I've helped organize. So I think at the time...
Altitude-wise, you guys are just on a mountaintop?
Or
higher?
Yeah, no, I get lightheaded. I get like motion sickness and stuff. But... I think at the time the only other CTFs that I've like helped with organizing and like leading the organization for was Maple CTF 2022, and then I helped with like a few other CTFs like here and there, but never really like stepped into the organizational role until Google CTF. I was involved with Google CTF in 2023 like as a challenge developer, and in 2024 as well, and then this year was like my first year as a lead, which I had a lot to learn. There was a lot that I needed to learn, which fair enough. But that was crazy. There was a lot of moving parts to organizing a CTF. I mean, obviously you guys know this, but
challenge writers to whip.
Lots of challenge writers to chase down and very politely.
So nice. So much nice. This must be the Canadian.
I'm sorry. I didn't want to bother you, but I was wondering if you could. And so there was.
If you could write your fucking challenge that was due 2 weeks ago.
There were definitely points where, I had a, like, yeah, I was like, oh, hey, like, just checking in, just wanted to make sure. And then, like, I don't know, as the weeks progressed, like, my words were like, where is your challenge?
I you have to, like, I think of, like, Yana's, like, sometimes having to do like mom mode a little bit where it's like, I will start this CTF with one challenge. I don't care. Give me the challenges early.
Right now.
Exactly.
Context, this was not for like Google CTF specifically because, oh my God, like there are very talented engineers here. Like, so I did not have to worry about like the quality of the CTF challenges because like the people who are making these challenges, yeah, some of them are like P4, like Just Cat the Fish. You know, we have like a lot of really good like people coming from all sorts of great teams. So I wasn't really worried about that. But there's just a lot of other like logistics to figure out outside of just like challenge development and writing, which was, you know, already a beast in of itself. Like I had to figure out like infra and making sure that infra was set up. And I wasn't even like, you know, deeply involved in the infra. There was someone that we had for that, but yet still, lots of things to consider in the grand scheme of things, and like a bunch of other like administrative logistics, which I'm going to be totally honest with you, was not expecting. But you know, hey, cool, chill.
You got to do everything. I have to run. I have to go do something. But Jan's going to take over hosting, and I will be back in like 5 or 10 minutes.
Okay, see you in a bit.
We're going rogue. Finally. Okay. All right.
Okay. I don't know what a CTF is.
That's right. this whole podcast, years of episodes, we've just been memeing. I'm not even Zardes.
Really?
No, I'm just kidding.
Wait, so who was Jan last year?
That's my body double.
Okay. No, that makes
sense. That's the body double I swap in to get COVID for me. I showed up to the after party late this year.
Yeah.
So I missed almost everybody. I got to see a couple of people and get COVID. So I got the most important thing out of the way. I got great. Myself reinfected. Google CTF has been one of these. I remember I think I played in the first Google CTF. And at the time, CTFs were like, industry CTFs were 100% guaranteed to be a joke. And now I think the number is like they're maybe 70% guaranteed to be a joke. If there's a CTF that has like a company name on it.
Yeah.
By the time there's also Mozilla CTF was surprisingly. Dope. Yeah. They used to do a CTF and then Google started up. Yeah. And we played and like, oh shit, this is pretty good. I don't remember when it was. I think I was still a grad student.
Yeah,
it's interesting because I think that's one of the few. Usually a CTF is organized by one team, right? So, you know, OOO was almost everybody was either kind of pulled out of Shellfish to host, or we had Slipper who came in from to join us, but you know, generally, like you said, Maple CTF, all of this stuff. Did you find like a difference in philosophies among, you know, different people on different teams that are making CTF challenges?
Kind of. So in Maple, like at least for Maple CTF, I remember that we had a philosophy of wanting to make sure that whatever challenges we made were fun. Like obviously, like difficulty was definitely one of our ethos, but I think the key one was we want to make something interesting and unique, which is probably the most generic answer that I could give, but it's true. The idea was that like there's nothing new under the sun when it comes to like certain classes of vulnerabilities, but that doesn't necessarily mean that you have to reinvent the wheel. Maybe you can use it in a different context. So with Maple CTF, we had this like stringent focus on like making sure that even if we did use something that was used many times before, we would try and like make it fun, you know, make it enjoyable for a CTF player. For Google CTF, not to say that like the challenges there weren't fun. I had a great time solving them. But for Google CTF, there was, I would argue, a greater emphasis on seeing what was novel. So again, like Google CTF, I'm blessed with like being surrounded by engineers who are just like insanely good at what they do. So having these people of like this caliber just create new and novel ideas or like based off of like vulnerabilities that they've seen, you know, is incredible because like you get to see them create really unique and interesting problems. I think one of the highlights is a web challenge from last year from a guy, Security MB, Michał Bankowski, who created basically a CSS mutation challenge, which was so cool. And, you know, the concept of like HTML mutation XSS, like that was a thing. The concept of like using CSS to leak data, that was also a thing. But using it in such a way that Michał used it in his challenge last year was incredible. And it was, I mean, I don't know, maybe it's not new to Michał or like others, but like it was new to me. And the fact that like Google CTF, like there, it felt like that there was a culture of like, we really want to push the envelope and see if we can make something new, was really, really interesting. Same thing with like Eduardo's challenge from this year called Circo. In spite of, I think there were a few unintended solutions. Eduardo, shout out to you. The core premise of that challenge was EntrySign, which was a hardware CPU vulnerability that Eduardo was part of that like is just like this incredible unraveling of how to reverse engineer microcode. And he converted it into like a format for a CTF challenge. So really cool stuff. Again, like I cannot take credit for these challenges, obviously. Yeah. But the fact that like these people have like made these challenges and are like, oh yeah, like is this good? I'm like, is this good? Yeah. So
it's interesting, you know, you get people kind of who live in their security cave and they come out every once in a while and then you ask them to bring you something and they come out with this diamond. And they're like, yeah, it's just some shit I found in the back. You know, and it's like, oh wow. You know, that's some of the coolest things. And I think there's this almost like a, you know, wise hermit effect is interesting because outside of hosting CTFs and, you know, these the EntrySign had press and write-ups and stuff, but they're this allows it, this exposure to a whole new audience that then, especially if things are, you know, preserved for replayability later, could sustain a lot of really cool kind of spreading of that knowledge. But you know, all of this sounds to me like in a world where DEF CON is looking for a new CTF organizer, maybe Google should host.
That's crazy. I don't know. I don't think the call for organizers has been out, but you know, if it has, I'll keep my ears to it, I guess. But
an interesting new era, right? Because so far it's been like these, you know.
Yeah, I don't know if that was. I don't know what would happen to Google CTF. I have a feeling like maybe that might not like work out. But
there would be a lot of hurdles, but. And there's also another big team that we've been talking about who, like you said, you've swept not just the last 4 years, everyone can count to four, but you swept one entire organizer's tenure as organizing CTF. Like, so Nautilus Institute, every game they played. Did you guys win all the quals? No, not all the quals.
No, I think like we won three. I think more Blue Water won, I think.
So say six or seven of their eight games that they set up, you won. What does that, is there any feeling like, okay, well, maybe it's exactly
like
listening and not viewing, V seems to have audio issues temporarily.
Sorry, you cut out for the entirety of that. I don't know what you
said. I gave a lot of people crab during the after party that I did make it to. Not crap, but some like nudges.
Yeah.
I think that would be a very cool thing to see. Kind of a sea change in CTF. But you know, it would be interesting. There's a lot of interest around. I think, you know, a lot of different teams for keeping DEF CON CTF like a cutting edge thing, which of course requires some organization. And we're trying to get an episode together with like past organizers and okay. see, you know, some advice and so on.
That sounds,
cool.
That's interesting. Yeah.
But other thoughts on CTF? Like one thing, since you're in industry now, one thing that I've observed is people CTF really thoroughly in school, and then when they graduate, it feels like there's a half-life where, you know, every 5 years you're going to lose half of your graduated CTF players.
Yeah.
As a team.
Yeah.
Do you observe that from your vantage point?
Oh yeah. Like, I mean, I think like I mentioned like a few names from the past of maybe they're not involved anymore, just because like they're busy and what are we going to do about that? I think that's a problem that's sort of just plaguing many other CTF teams. And while I would make the argument that in spite of like people, you know, like they're going off, like they're moving on, they're in industry and their involvement in CTFs isn't as much as they were before, there's still sort of like a level of camaraderie. Like if basically the door is still open, you know, if you somehow are like, like, I want to play in a CTF again, then we will happily accept that.
Make them solve your create challenges for them, like Pico level, just to make sure they still got
it. Yeah, like, please go through the entire process again. Please attend a demo. And we've actually had very interesting cases where, like, some people, they get into the industry, they get really busy, but then, like, they pop back in. Like, oh, hey, like, I kind of miss the CTF scene. Like, I want to play again. So it's like, hell yeah. Like, that's not an issue for us. We've, especially in MMM, there's like definitely like a very strong community of like alumni in CMU who still play. And now that I'm like an alumni of UBC, like there's a growing alumni of UBC people who still play. So, yeah.
That's the, what about the student side? Are there new students at CMU that are playing?
Yeah. We had a few people in CMU play, a few new faces, which was really, really exciting. Yeah,
because it's one of these one risk of having, you know, PPPs expanded into MMM. But is it all of the young blood is coming from Maple Bacon side of the equation, or it's a mix?
It's nice. A mix, yeah, for sure. We have like there was like a few new people in the doc. There were a few new people in PPP. The new few new people in Maple Bacon. We recently, actually, like this year, we gave one of the black badges to a new person in Maple Bacon because they just like fucking killed it for, for like the CTF. Like they were just like on top of like exploit writing and like patch development. And we were like, yeah, I mean, checks all the boxes. So I guess.
Well, see, that's what awesome. My joke was going to be is somebody needs to get the black badges, Jan. So you need new people.
Yeah, exactly.
But yeah. I mean, it makes sense. They're contributing. Like that's great.
Yeah. By the way, Zardes, Sina, your former intern, when we gave him his black badge, because...
Well, he got it!
Yeah!
This year?
No, we gave him one last year.
He got one last year. Okay. He wasn't sure when I talked to him last year, and then I didn't follow up. I mean, I saw him at the after party, actually, but...
Sina, sorry about that. You should probably talk to Zardes after this episode comes out. But, for this year and last year, Sina just like did like an insane job.
Yeah.
Guy's like,
incredible.
Really quickly, like showboat him just for like one second here.
Please.
He's incredible. He's like involved with ASUS, and I think he like came. Sina, if you're watching this later, please feel free to correct me later. But like, I think he came to UBC for Maple Bacon specifically. So he was I don't know, like just a really cool guy, super good, like ingratiated himself into the Maple Bacon community and MMM community as a result. Did an insane job for DEF CON like the first time he was there and then the second time he was here this year. So yeah, no, that black badge was also like well deserved. And we were making a joke of like if we saw you at the after parties, artist, then like we would like tell Sina. Anyway, yeah.
It's awesome. I mean, Sina was my intern for 8 weeks.
Yeah.
That's just our summer internships are very short through that program. And
the didn't,
fucking incredible job, right? Like, we have a whole dojo, a whole module of V8 challenges that he designed and learned through this whole thing. It's awesome.
No, he's so
cool. Very cool. It's one of the awesome things about the CTF community is you're just like, here's this genius person that, like, normally, you know, you have to, in the Middle Ages, you'd have to be like kings to have exposure to this much talent or something. And here it's just like all over the scene.
What's up? And my name is, like, it's crazy. I've definitely had, like, my fair share of, like, meeting some new, like, Maple Bacon or PPP people. And, like, they'll just say something and I'm like, damn, okay. Yeah, got it. Acknowledged.
Yeah, it's very awesome.
Yeah.
That's great. So then maybe, I don't know what you talked about, so maybe this is something you've already covered, but what do you see as the future of CTF?
I hope that we are all best friends with sunshine and rainbow. So the future of CTFs is a very interesting topic that I've,
like, it could be personal or community wise, maybe. I don't know.
Yeah, no, I've talked about this with a lot of, like, different people. For me, there's a technical answer of, like, oh, like, future of AI and CTFs, which I think is, like, the hotness right now to talk about. And I'm going to be so honest with you, I don't have a lot of, like, expert level information about that, so I'm just not going to touch it because that's just not my realm of expertise at the moment. But there is, like, I guess a more social aspect of the future of CTFs where I think more and more teams, and regardless if they're, like, merged teams or they're just, like, groups of friends hacking together, more and more teams, like, feel the drive and the pull to do better in, like, bigger CTFs. So mm-hmm. I think there was sort of this, at least, like, in the context of how I feel with, like, Maple Bacon and MMM, there was, like, this sort of general idea of, like, yeah, like, but we're doing this to have fun. But there's definitely been sort of a drive of, like, there are more teams who are really in it for the biscuit. Lots of CTFs have, like, incredible prize pools. Lots of CTFs have just, like, the clout to back themselves up. So you get a level of, like, determination and willpower that way that I think can be unmatched, but it can also create, in my opinion, like, rather unfortunate like, problems of burnout. And I really hate to see that because there's, like, some genuinely talented people on other teams and I'm like, no, please stay. Like, it would be really cool to see you around. Yeah. So I would make the argument that the future of CTFs is I don't want to pretend like I'm an authority to speak on it. But I do want to say that I'd like for some of the aspects of it to be more social and community driven. And maybe it is, and I'm just, like, not part of those spaces right now. But I think I've had the most fun and I've learned the most just by, like, being with my friends. I don't think I've said this enough, but Maple Bacon, I love them. I mean, I'm biased, but, like, I think they're the best team ever. They are full of people who I consider, like, genuine friends. They're people that I would, like, ride or die with. If someone has said anything bad about Maple Bacon, I will find you. And I just love them. And of course, by consequence, MMM, they're my family, basically. I love PvP. I love the duck. Not just on the fact that they have, like, incredible technical acumen. Like, these guys are my friends. We hang out. We get coffee together, you know? So I would love to see more of that in the community. And I really hope that that's sort of, like, the future of the CTF community, where genuinely, we actually are just a bunch of friends who, you know, sometimes we hack against each other, but sometimes we hack with each other.
Yeah, I think you made a really interesting point that it's maybe worth addressing. I mean, trying to reiterate or think about how we can do this, right? You made the artist comp of building community and seeing people not as competitors. And actually, like, if you remember, Jan Swarty made a similar comment that he actually mm-hmm. actively fosters a community of people that they, like, talk about what they're doing without judgment and stuff. I don't know if it's because the nature of CTFs is at its core a competition that is so hard to shake.
Well, I think the big CTF after parties of the last 8 years or so have helped a lot.
Yes.
Yeah.
When I started CTFing, there wasn't this, not really. And so it was all, you know, these guys are than me, and these guys are than me, and these guys are than me.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think there's also
maybe ways like in the competition itself to try to foster that, which I don't know how to actually do that. But
we explored it, right? When we were thinking of doing this tournament mode, right, which Nautilus, you know, managed to pull off. Was it 2019 we were thinking about this and abandoned?
Like no, almost every year. During COVID.
Okay, yeah. But
was this the dunk tank idea that you abandoned? Or
Yeah. The dunk tank, we had all of these kind of live, you know, spectatable ideas. But the tournament one, we were thinking of a doubles where you get matched with another team as your partner. To kind of try to drive this collaboration and you know,
I definitely don't remember this. I think this was an idea you threw out in one meeting.
Okay,
I don't know if
this
was
thinking
like
about it. Maybe it was an idea throughout.
Seriously considering.
It was a fever dream.
But that would be super cool. We had to collaborate with another team to push through. I think that would be very interesting.
I will say, like, I have some friends in like other CTF teams, like Dice Gang, for example. I have like this really funny story with Dice Gang. There's a member there who like we're family friends technically. That's a story. Feel free to talk to Strelick about that. Shout out to you, Strelick. But we like, you know, you foster friendships with like other CTF teams and outside of like the competition, because naturally, like during DEF CON CTF, it's not like I'm going to be like, hey, guys, we're all friends. No, I'm there for a very specific reason, too. But like during the downtime and obviously during the after party, it's just really fun to be like, oh, my God, like my friends, you know, again, like the whole thing where like, some of us in MMM, when we see someone in like a Shellfish shirt, like that's Shellfish. Same thing with like Mahacaroni. Oh, big fan of Mahacaroni. Love Mahacaroni.
Everyone loves the Italian.
Yeah. They are very fun.
Yeah.
It'll be interesting to see how that the scene kind of. I don't know. There's always a feeling, and I'm a very anxious person, kind of by nature. So I always have this anxiety that the scene is just on the way down. It's like disintegrating. It's, you know, all of the, it just kind of never happens though. I've been thinking for a long time that all of this, like the consolidation, you know, will, for example, make it impossible for new people to kind of spin up, but that doesn't seem to have been happening either. Somehow people survive regardless.
In spite of it all.
In spite of it all.
Yeah.
I think that's a good sign. I think it's worth maybe what you're saying, Jan, of thinking about if it's growing the way that we think it should, right? Or if, like, I don't know, could we get more people into it? Can we get more small groups into it? Can we get more small groups that become big groups into it? Like, what is it kind of?
Yeah. The small group, there's something about at least everyone being able to fit into one, like, normal hotel room, not a suite. And, like, these are the people that you're counting on, that as teams balloon out, there's a different feeling there. Becomes more of a big operation. The first time when Samurai won, you know, with a coordinated massive team, at least in raw in terms of accounting everybody on the team.
Yeah.
That felt like a phase shift in CTF. It was what, like 20...
But you haven't, have we talked to them about it? Did they, key to their success?
I think, as with everything, not to put, we, you know, have had some of the people involved on the podcast, maybe should do that again, and maybe should get kind of, have a little series on mega teams. But my modern understanding is that Samurai had huge absolute numbers, but like, any CTF, they had a core. It's just that by merging, being the first team to merge with like, you know, four teams or something, their core was bigger. And it wasn't the raw number. It wasn't that they had 40 people or something, which was revolutionary at the time. It was that instead of having a core of four badasses, they had a core of 12 badasses.
Yeah.
Whereas everyone else had a core of four badasses. And that's where, you know, I think that's one thing that's unique about MMM is, again, like the raw number of badasses there. I think at any given time, Shellfish, you have some absolutely incredible hackers, And then you have a lot of good hackers, and then you have a lot of people hanging out and chilling. But, you know, figuring out how to increase that concentration of excellent hackers and you know, keeping the team small and focused is one way of doing that.
Yeah.
That's interesting.
And no, it's a fair point. And I'll say that, like, you know, with the size of MMM, like, that's not, like, something that we can do ourselves. So the way that we try to sort of attend to that is just removing some of the maybe the intimidation factor on some of these people. Like, if you've ever talked to Jinmo, he's just a genuinely really nice person. Same thing with, like, Juno from Theory and, like Robert Shao, obviously, BPAC and the others. I think, like one of my, like, I don't know, CTF best friends is, like, Carolina Zaratak, who, if you've ever seen her challenges for Plaid CTF, insane. Just, like, kind of parsing through that somewhat of an intimidation factor and just, like, talking to them like a normal person ends up being very helpful and actually helps to create some like confidence. I think the minute that you start talking to them not as, like, you know, an idol to look up to, which is weird, and just as, like, a person, you know, a friend of yours, you end up, I feel like, at least this was the case for MMM, you bridge that gap pretty quickly. Yeah.
Yeah, that's an interesting effect of the small community as well, right? It's like, you know, you start out and it's like, I've had these moments with hackers that you know, were incredible, famous, et cetera. And you walk into a room and they're just sitting at,
like, oh, like, how are you?
Yeah. And then 2 days later, you're like, and you're all working together and it's great.
Yeah.
Yeah, that is cool. Do people, are you at the point where, you know, the new blood in Maple Bacon, they're like, it's me.
Some people, there's like this anonymous, like, back when Facebook was, like, somewhat of a thing, there was this, like, anonymous UBC confessions post that was, and there was one that was made about me that was like, V, like, you're, like, crazy cool and stuff. And I was like, hey, thanks. Don't know who you are though, but, so... Yeah, but I don't necessarily think that I'm, like, on a level of you know attracting fans. That's kind of
not at Adam D's level.
Well, okay, that's not where I was going with this. I was going to say, well, in a way to
fans,
of course, juice our numbers. If
yeah,
you are a V fan, you should leave a comment in the YouTubes on this episode, and don't
Great.
Be weird, but just say nice things.
If you're a V fan, if you're a true V fan, please respond in binary, the word honk. And if not the word honk, please respond with the entire B movie script. Thank you so much.
Cool. I think that'll do great things for our YouTube algorithm. So thank you.
You're welcome. Shout out to you guys. Happy to help.
Oh, man. All right. Well, thank you so much for chatting with us today. Is there anything else you want to plug or talk about or tell the people while you're here?
Shout out Maple Bacon. I love you.
I think
you.
You've done that very, yeah. Very well.
Shout out MMM. I love you. thank you. Thank you to every other team for giving us great competition. You guys make us work for it every year. And actually, I welcome that. So thank you very much. If you are interested in learning about CTFs, Pico CTF, Phone College, DreamHack, Hextree, there's so many. Go out, go forth and find those.
Google CTF. Google CTF.
Also Google CTF. Whoops.
There's one that you can't mention because it's not out there. And it's what you were talking about. It's the internal Maple Bacon, you know, CTF throw up material.
If you wish, if you find yourself a UBC prospective student, check Maple Bacon out. We've got material for you. Say hi to Robert Shao if you do.
Here's my pitch to consider. Take that material,
yeah,
make it public on Pwn College. Huh?
You know what? Actually, you know what? We'll think about this offline. We'll talk about it. Okay.
Incredible. All right. Well, let me see if I can do this. We'll try to do this live. All right. Let's see how this goes. Ready? So thanks, everyone, for joining us today. And thanks, V, for being here as well. I'm Adam D. You can find me online at Adam Dupay. He's Zardis. You can find him online at Zardis. Together, we're CTF Radio. You can find us online at CTF Radio. And take care and happy hacking. This episode of CTF Radio is produced by Adam Dupay. Theme music provided by Swarty. Lyrics by Carlene Dupay.
Algorithms, Easter eggs. It's all about the hack. Python. Chaos. Nights of sleep never getting back. Noob or leak. Make your best attack. Because it's all for the glory of capturing that flag.
Incredible.